First, this week, Barack Obama paid a visit to Saudi Arabia, a long-time US ally, and tensions were evident as the president arrived and was greeted by the local governor, not the Saudi king, as is customary. Now, the Saudis, you see, they've been at odds with the US for striking a nuclear deal with archenemy Iran and for failing to enforce the chemical red line against the Assad regime in Syria. Obama didn't help matters with a recent magazine interview in which he said the Sunni kingdom needs to, quote, share the Middle East with Shia Iran. And he complained of the Saudis being free riders who expect the US military to intervene solely and heavily in regional disputes like Syria's civil war. Now, the episode raises an important question. Should the US remain a global policeman, especially in the Middle East, or should it intervene with more discrimination and encourage allies to better look after their own security? Now, to talk about these matters, I can't think of a more distinguished foreign policy expert than our first guest this morning. John Mearsheimer is Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago. He's also author of, among other influential books, The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. G'day, John. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Is the president right to call the Saudis free riders?
No, I don't think the Saudis are free riders. The United States definitely is dealing with a lot of free riders. They're mainly in Europe and East Asia. The Japanese and the Germans, for example, are big free riders. And they're a problem for the United States for that reason. But the Saudis don't fit in that category. The problem with the Saudis, as you said in your opening remarks, is that their interests and our interests don't line up on a number of important issues, the most important of which is Iran. What President Obama is interested in doing is not only concluding a nuclear agreement with Iran, which is now signed, sealed, and delivered, but he's also interested in having a rapprochement between the United States and the Iranians. Mm. This is anathema to Saudi Arabia. And as a result, there is a real difference between the two countries that's right out in the open. Furthermore, what Obama is talking about doing in the Middle East is beginning to pull back. Mm. The United States has been heavily involved in doing massive social engineering in that region for quite a few years now, and it's quite clear that it's not worked well at all. In fact, it's been disastrous. And what the president wants to do is he wants to back off somewhat, and he wants countries like Saudi Arabia to do more for themselves. Mm. Well, from the Saudi perspective, the thought of doing more for themselves at a time when Iran is a looming threat is a really scary thought. And this is the taproot of the difference between Obama and the Saudis at this point in time.
Yeah, but the prevailing wisdom in Washington among many neoconservatives on the right, liberal interventionists on the left, is that the US has a vital interest in making sure that the Saudis don't become another failed state. Is there a danger that Obama might be putting too much pressure on the Saudis?
I think there's no question that Saudi Arabia is a vital interest of the United States. Nobody would disagree with that. There is a problem that Saudi Arabia faces, but it's got little to do with the United States, and it has to do with internal problems that they face. It's important to understand that there's a great deal of dissatisfaction among young people in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And indeed, 60%, that's 60% of the population of Saudi Arabia is under 21. Mm-hmm. Now, the way the Saudis have historically dealt with unhappiness down below is to buy young people off, and to buy older people off as well. And they could do that because they had all this oil wealth. But the problem they face is that given the drop in oil prices, they don't have the revenues available to buy people off anymore. So when you think about all that youth and you think about how unhappy a lot of those young people are, and you think about the absence of resources to buy them off, you may be sitting on top of a powder keg.
Well, let's not forget the Saudis have sponsored, you know, mosques that promote a Sunni brand of Islam, a Wahhabism. That's a gateway drug to Jesus. I think something like 15 out of the 19 hijackers on September 11, John, they were Saudi nationals. And right now, I think both sides of Congress, they want to let the families of the 9/11 victims sue the Saudi government over any role it played in the attacks.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the Saudis are a real source of trouble for the United States on the terrorism front. And it's also clear, because Saudi Arabia is such a vital interest to the United States, because it controls so much oil, that we have been willing not to crack down on the Saudis on this whole issue of terrorism. But now, with Congress pushing, we're moving in that direction. And this is a harbinger of more trouble ahead. I would also note, Tom, the Saudis have a very mixed attitude towards ISIS. The United States is deeply committed to defeating ISIS decisively. Mm. But ISIS is a Sunni operation, and the Saudis are Sunnis. And the Saudis tend to see the Middle East now in terms of the Sunni-Shia divide. Mm. And the fact that the United States has its gun sights on ISIS does not leave the Saudis with a warm and fuzzy feeling. And that is also a point of contention, although it doesn't get much attention in the newspaper.
Good Saturday morning to you. If you've just tuned in, you're on Saturday Extra. I'm Tom Switzer, and I'm chatting with Professor John Mearsheimer about President Obama's trip to Saudi Arabia. John, let's clarify your broader point about free riding, leaving aside the Saudis here. Now, you see free riding as a natural consequence of the larger strategy of, you know, global hegemony, global policemen that the US has pretty much pursued since the end of the Cold War. Explain that for us.
Well, since the Cold War ended, the United States has taken it upon itself to basically try to run the world. Madeleine Albright once said that the United States is the indispensable nation. It stands taller and it sees further. Now, when you have that kind of mentality, it's almost natural that you're going to treat other countries around the world like they're your children. And you're not going to think they're capable of tying their own shoes or putting on their own pants. And therefore, you're going to do lots of things for them that they should be doing for themselves.
Social engineering on a global scale.
Yes, exactly. It is social engineering. And the end result of it is we are perfectly content to live with free riding. Mm. The fact that Japan and Germany rely on the United States for nuclear deterrence and for deterrence more generally doesn't bother the elites in Washington because they see it as our responsibility to protect these countries because we don't think they're capable of protecting themselves because, again, we're the indispensable nation.
What should the U.S. do instead?
Well, what's happened here, Tom, is that Americans are now very dissatisfied with this policy, not only because it leads to failure, but also because it costs a lot of money. If you go to, let's say, LaGuardia Airport or LA International Airport in the United States, you quickly discover that you're basically dealing with third world airports. Then you go to China and you see these beautiful airports in places like Shanghai and Beijing, or you can go to Poland, go to Warsaw and see the beautiful new airport they have. And you start saying to yourself, why are we spending all this money protecting people who are rich and capable of protecting themselves? So what's happening here is, and you see it with Donald Trump, and by the way, you see it with Bernie Sanders, is that people are beginning to say the United States has got to pull back. We have to do less for other people and we have to do more for ourselves. President Obama, for example, talks about nation building at home. And when you begin to develop that mentality, what you end up saying to countries like Saudi Arabia is you have to do more for yourself. It's not that we don't think you're a vital interest anymore. It's not that we're going to allow Iran to conquer you, because we're never going to let that happen. But we're not going to be there shepherding over you every minute of the day. You have to grow up and do more to protect yourself. And this is a message that we're not only sending to the Saudis, we're sending to other countries as well.
So although Obama, Trump, Sanders, they express themselves in different ways, obviously, they are nevertheless at one in this critique of free riding. Do you think this represents an aberration, or is this U.S. policy going forward?
It's very hard to say. There's no question that in the American body politic, there is a great deal of support for, let's call it, the Obama-Sanders-Trump view. And it explains in good part why both Sanders and Trump are doing so well, despite the fact that most people would normally think that they would be unpopular. So there is support in the body politic for this kind of policy. But inside of Washington, D.C., the Madeleine Albright view of the world still is the dominant view.
This is the neoconservative liberal interventionist axis, if you like.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And as you know from having gone to Washington yourself, almost everybody is either a neoconservative or a liberal interventionist. There are very few people who are interested in some sort of restraint in American foreign policy.
John, what are the implications of this policy you're identifying, this offshore balancing? What are the implications for East Asia? I mean, does it mean that longtime allies like Australia, and we have a security alliance with Washington, it's lasted since 1951, does that mean we need to spend more on defense spending, for example?
Well, I think that countries like Australia will have to spend more on defense, as will the Japanese, but it's not because of what I've been talking about. It's simply because the rise of China will force that. The United States is not going to practice offshore balancing in East Asia in the sense that it's going to leave the area and it's going to force its allies to pick up more of the slack. The United States is pivoting to Asia. The United States is very fearful of the China threat, and our presence in Asia, East Asia in particular, is going to increase over time, and we're going to work more closely with the Australians, the Filipinos, the Vietnamese, the Japanese, the South Koreans, and so forth and so on, to do everything we can to contain China in places like the South China Sea and the East China Sea. And everybody will increase their defense budget, including the Australians, but the United States will be there in full force.
And yet the U.S. allies, including Australia, have been very reluctant to follow those freedom of navigation patrols through the South China Sea, John.
Well, I think there's a very powerful tendency for countries in East Asia to let the United States do the heavy lifting. From an Australian point of view, you don't want to pick a fight with the Chinese. If anybody's going to get tough with the Chinese, you want it to be the Americans. And if you're Australian, even if you're Japanese, you want the best of both worlds. And that means you want to have good relations with both the Chinese and the United States. So you let the United States do the dirty work. And of course, the United States, given its present mentality, is willing to do that. It's willing to behave as the indispensable nation. But I think with the passage of time, that China is likely to become more aggressive, and that countries in East Asia like Australia will recognize that, and they'll side more with the United States than with China.
John, an enlightening discussion as always. Thanks so much for being with RN this morning, mate.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
John Mearsheimer, Professor of Political Science at the University of Chicago. Now, for more of his views on this subject, keep an eye out for his feature piece in a forthcoming Foreign Affairs magazine.